Okay, good morning. It's great to see you and to try to maybe talk a little bit about a Yontif topic, maybe a Simchas Torah topic, because we're already now looking at the last half of Yontif, and sort of a topic which actually connects to Baba Basra. Most of you are not in yeshiva this year, but yeshiva is the moment learning the first parak of Baba Basra. And there is a Gemara at the end of the parak. We're not there yet, but we can aspire. But a Gemara at the end of the first parak of Baba Basra, which is very important to our understanding of what we read on Simchas Torah. And maybe it says a little bit about Torah as a whole and about Kriyas Torah as a whole. And it's a fascinating topic dealing with the very end of the Torah. The last eight psukim of the Torah create a pretty significant challenge. Normally, if you have, say, an autobiography, you have someone writing about their own life, so it doesn't end with the person saying, "So then I had a nice life, and then I died, and a lot of people came to my funeral, and it was a big deal, and there were some nice hasbeidim, and so many other interesting things happened." Normally, the one writing has to stop after he passes away. He doesn't get to keep on writing. But in the Torah, it seems like that's not what's going on, because the Torah is certainly not autobiography, but it's written down by Moshe Rabbeinu, whose story is indeed being told. And somehow the story keeps going even after he dies. The last eight psukim of the Torah describe what happens after Moshe Rabbeinu is no longer alive. So how could that be? How could that work that the Torah keeps on going with Moshe writing content after he's no longer alive to be doing so? So the Gemara in the end of the first parak of Baba Basra, and also in Menachos, the Gemara has essentially two opinions as to how that could be. One opinion is that indeed the last eight psukim were not written down by Moshe, but instead were written by Yehoshua. So when we say that Moshe wrote the Torah, we mean up until that point, up until the last eight psukim, and by necessity, those last eight psukim were written by Yehoshua. And the other possibility is that no, those last eight psukim were written by Moshe, but in a different way, that the whole rest of the Torah, God would recite, God would dictate, and Moshe Omer Vekosev, and Moshe would repeat and then write it down. And these last eight psukim, God would dictate, and Moshe Kosev Bedema. So there's something different about how they were written. God would dictate them, and Moshe wrote them down. What does demo mean? That's the question. So the most common translation is that it means a tear. And that it evokes this emotional picture that here Moshe is writing about the aftermath of his own passing. So clearly that is very highly charged. So he was writing with a tear in his eye. That's what it sounds like, the simple explanation. There are others who understand it differently. The Mari Mifanu is quoted by many as understanding that it means bedimua, that it was all mixed up, that essentially because it wasn't yet true, Moshe wrote it down in a way that would not be understandable to anyone. And then after he passed away, so then it was arranged in a way that was readable. And as some point out, the Magon has a similar but different comment, that maybe both opinions in the Gemara are true then, that maybe it means Moshe wrote it down in this mixed up way, and then Yehoshua later organized it into a way that we would be able to understand it. It's a whole fascinating idea. The Marsha has a comment over there, which has probably been misunderstood to some extent, that Marsha writes that the idea of it being written with a demo, with a tear, some kind of like impermanence, is because it wasn't yet true. what was going to happen afterwards. Moshe was writing this when he was alive. And therefore, he didn't want it to look like Sheker, to be Mechzik Sheker. And the Maharsha explains that that's also why you notice the subtle difference. The Gemara had said that the rest of the Torah, God dictated and Moshe repeated and wrote. And here, God dictated and Moshe just wrote. So why didn't he also repeat it? Why didn't he say it out loud also? So the Maharsha understands in this context also that he was afraid it shouldn't be Mechzik Hashikra. It shouldn't look like something false. So there are some who have read this Maharsha and come to the pretty surprising conclusion that there's no Isser of Sheker if it's in writing. So apparently to say out loud, that was the concern of Sheker, but to write it wasn't the concern, so therefore that's the distinction. And it could be that there may be some journalists who have worked off this position that there is a heter of Sheker in writing, but that's pashtus, not what the Maharsha means. As others point out, what the Maharsha presumably is saying is that it's not Sheker. He was saying something that was going to be true. It wasn't Sheker on any level. It's just that it was Mechzik Sheker, that when you say something that is not yet true, it has the impression of Sheker. And Moshe Rabbeinu was so careful, he doesn't even want to give the impression of Sheker. But certainly not actual Sheker. And the distinction between writing and speech is because when you're writing something, so it's meant to be read at a later date, and it's going to be true then, so then there isn't even the appearance of Sheker. So like when the newspaper is published the next day's edition, they put tomorrow's date on it because they know that when people see it, it's going to be the correct date. So no one says that that's an example of a newspaper not telling the truth, the fact that it published the wrong date because it was targeted at when it's going to be read. So that's normal in writing. But in speaking, it has the appearance of Sheker. So Moshe didn't even want the appearance of Sheker. That's probably what the Maharsha was getting at. But okay, in any event, there is an effort to try to explain how it could be that Moshe was able to keep on writing these psukim even after he was no longer alive. And we have these two theories of the Gemara, either that Yoshua wrote it or that Moshe wrote it in a different way. And the Gemara says that one way or another, there's something unusual about these psukim. And therefore, Ho'el Vishtani, since it's different, since they are distinguished, so there is a different halacha applied to them. And what is that halacha? Yachid Kaireyosan. Problem is, what do those words mean? There's so much mystery built into this whole section here. So we have a mysterious origin for these psukim, and there is a mysterious halacha, and there's a mysterious phrase. We don't even know what it means. And this phrase is so mysterious that there are at least six different interpretations in the Rishonim. And some of them are the opposite of each other. Some of them directly contradict each other. So to give an example of that, actually two interpretations are both cited in the name of the Rimi Gash. You can find these in the Rishonim, the Shita Mekubetzes, the end of Baba Basra, and in Menachos and Daf Lamed, where these Gemaras appear. So Shita Mekubetzes, the quotes the Rimi Gash, really is saying two opposite things with opposite points. So one way of saying it is that Yochid Kariosam, that these last eight psukim should be read, say, biyachad, should be read together with the previous psukim. And therefore, the idea would be that because they have somewhat of a lower status, presumably, they don't have the same full transmission as the rest of the Torah. So we need to kind of piggyback onto something else. It needs to be associated with earlier psukim, so that distinction should be played down. And the second interpretation that is also quoted in the name of the Rimi Gash is the exact opposite, both literally in terms of the language and also in terms of the message, that we should set aside these eight psukim because of their different origin, And therefore, Yochid, Kariyosam, read them, Yochid, read them alone. So those are the first two interpretations, two opposite ideas. Either that they're read as a combination with the previous psukim, or they're read separately from the previous psukim. Separate ideas with opposite ideas with opposite messages. But in addition, there are a number of other interpretations. Tosus, the Maseches Menachos, quotes the idea that once upon a time, it used to be that you would have the one reading the Torah and you would have somebody else alongside. So what exactly this is referring to, there are different possibilities. But let's say if you have nowadays, we have the Ola is not actually laning usually. There's a Balkore and there is one getting Aliyah reading next to him. So you have really two people laning. And perhaps the idea is that Yachid Kariyosan means you should only have one. Yachid, only one as opposed to two. So Rabbeinu Tam is quoted in Tos. Rabbeinu Tam says, doesn't think that's correct. But that was not the practice in the time of the Gemara that it would be referring to. So rather, says Rabbeinu Tam, what do we mean? We mean that you shouldn't break it up into two aliyahs. We should read those last eight psukim biyachem. Should read it all together. So that gives us four interpretations so far, all pointing in different directions, all using different understandings of the word yachid, yachad, biyachid, and often using, if you look at these rishonim inside, see that a lot of them use the same words to express these different ideas. So the phrase "ein mafsikin behem" could mean a number of these interpretations, and you find that in a number of the Rishonim. So again, so much mystery here. But it's the last two that are the most interesting for us, or that the most relevant for us, and the most possibly applicable halacha, or relevant in terms of just the deeper understanding of what's going on. So first, I will mention the Rambam. The Rambam's opinion is that what does Yachid Kariyosan mean? So what does Yachid often mean in halachic terms? What do we mean when we talk about a Yachid? Yachid in distinction to a Tzibur. So it says these last psukim, Yachid Kariyosan, they can be read without a minion. So that's very interesting. But that poses its own problem. And among the problems, so first of all, the Ravid, not surprisingly, the Ravid's pretty upset about this. He disagrees with this interpretation. He prefers the idea of Ein Mafsikin Behem, we mentioned before. But he also objects to the Rambam. He says, conceptually, the idea of a Yachid reading this, why would that even be necessary? Ve'hatzibor laheichon holchu. That's his language. What happened to the tzibor? Where'd they go? So maybe the Ravid lived in a very rarefied world, because have to acknowledge that I think in our day and time, the question of where did the Tzibor go? So it's not so impossible to imagine that part of the minyan leaves. We know that it happens that people, right or wrong, could get up and leave in the middle of a minyan, and you wouldn't have the minyan anymore. And if there's one day when you could especially imagine that happening, it's probably Simchas Torah. Right, so we know there's a lot going on, right or wrong, and people wander off. So people get their aliyahs and they go off and make kiddush, and who knows whether they come back or not. So the idea that you may lose your minyan in the middle of Kriyas HaTorah is certainly conceivable at any time, but especially on this day, in Simchas Torah, it's not so hard to imagine that the tzibur might disappear, or it might lose some of its parts. So the Ravid's question is difficult to understand. What does he mean at tzibur lahechon hal?
I mean, just to understand, the Rambam and perhaps the Rabbeinu Tam, are they implying that there's perhaps not necessarily Kedusha Sefer Torah of these final psukim, or is that beyond the pale?
All right, that's a great question. You know, there's some, it's not necessarily beyond the pale. We have to figure out what exactly Sefer Torah there is, but that there's some different status. It's not necessarily beyond the pale. First of all, we'll see some possible explanations. But the Gemara does say they're different. Ha'ol v'shtanis. That comes from the Gemara itself, that there is some kind of distinction to be drawn, and that leads to this halacha. So it doesn't have to mean that, but it certainly sounds like it's a reasonable path to go down in light of what Chazal is saying. So what you're highlighting is that there's a couple of questions to ask about the Rambam. So one question you're getting to is just why does he say what he says? But before that, the question is posed, just what's the scenario? That why would you need this? You know, you have your minion already, so why would we even have to talk about this? Now, the counter question to that is, why do we have to talk about it? Because it could happen, the minion could leave. People could walk out, and you could end up with less than a minion. So a number of the Achronim explain the Ravid's question and say that maybe what the Ravid is getting at is more lumdish in nature. It's not that he's so in the luft that he is unaware of what could happen in our shuls, but he is a lumdin, and maybe the question is coming from a lumdish perspective, because there is a din the Rishonim have, it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch and Siman Nun Hay, that if you have a davar shebekdusha that starts with a minyan, and then people leave, which they're not supposed to do. Gemara has a pretty harsh attitude to people doing that. But Lamaisa, if they do that, the tzibur is still allowed to continue. So if you start a davar shebekdusha with a minyan, and somebody leaves, leaving you with less than a minyan, normally you're still allowed to continue anyway. So maybe what the Ravid is asking is not a, it's not a disconnected from reality question, but it's a lumdisha question that essentially you have to phrase it as din tzibur lehechan hochu, that the halacha of the minyan should still be there even if somebody left. So al pi din, if the minyan is still there, what's the chiddush? Why do I need the special status for these last day psukim? I'd be able to keep reading anyway. So Achronim have a few suggestions. Among the suggestions are, just to mention two, there is a machlokis in Rishonim, this idea that you can keep going with the davar shebekedusha even if you don't have a minyan anymore. So does that mean even if you only have one or two? Or do you have to at least have rope? So maybe if you have six or seven, you can keep going. But if you only have one or two, then maybe normally you can't. And then the chiddush would be that here, this is the exception. Here you could do even with a minority. So that gets into its own whole lumdus. Kiva Eger and others talk about what exactly is the nature of this din that you can continue without a minyan. Is it that a davar shebekedusha, we say it needs a minyan, it means it needs to start with a minyan. But once it starts with a minyan, if the minyan doesn't stay the whole time, it can still continue. Or does it mean something else? Maybe it means that once you establish a minyan, so then rubo kukulo, as long as you have most of it still there, so then the minyan is considered to be there. And that may affect the question, for example, like Rabbi Akiva Eiger talks about, let's say you have a minyan and five leave. So now you don't have rope. And then somebody else comes. So now you again have most of the minyan. So how does that fit in? So that's connected to this question of how do you understand that particular din? And maybe that leaves room for the chiddush or the Rambam. Another suggestion is that maybe the idea that you can continue even without a minyan that means you can continue the thing that you're in the middle of, but you can't necessarily start a new thing. This comes up, l'maisa, by the way, when it's even without Kriya Sed Torah, but let's say somebody leaves the middle of Chazar Sashatz, so it's clear you can finish Chazar Sashatz, but then what, Kaddish Tiskabel, is that also a part of it? Is that something else? What about Kaddish after that? Is that already a new thing? So how far can you go with saying that you can keep going on the premise of the original minyan that's no longer there? How long does that last? So then the question could be, all right, Kriya Sed Torah, once upon a time it used to be, we only had a bracha in the very beginning and a bracha in the end. So then, okay, it's all one unit. Maybe if the minyan leaves, you could go all the way to the end of the parsha. But nowadays that we have brachos at the beginning and the end of every aliyah, so maybe it's not so obvious that a new aliyah, you'd be able to continue without the minyan. So maybe that's the chiddush. Okay, so maybe these last day psukim would have a different story as far as that's concerned. So okay, you have to figure out the mechanics, the scenario, where exactly does it impact this idea of Yachid Kari Osam. Of course, no one's even considering the question, maybe you don't have a minyan for any of it, and you're only asking about these last day psukim. But okay, so you have to figure out what exactly is the Rambam scenario. But then it gets to the question, like Jonathan was raising, that what does it mean conceptually? Why should it be that the last eight psukim don't need a minyan? Why should that be the case? So Rav Soloveitchik had an explanation in his shiurim that's quoted in slightly different versions and different svarim of the Talmidim. It comes up in a couple of different publications. Rav Shechter talks about it in Nefesh HaRav, and Willig wrote an article about it that was printed in the Beis Yosef Shol many years ago. The different presentations of how the Rav addressed this, but the essential gist of it is that the idea of a minyan for Kriya Sed Torah is actually maybe slightly different than what we normally find. So we had been referring the past few minutes to a davar shebekdusha and the need for a minyan. But it could be that the davar shebekdusha is actually a different category. That something like kedusha, kaddish, that's what we call a davar shebekdusha. I believe where the Rav explained davar shebekdusha is something that declares the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and is responsive in nature, like Kedusha, Kaddish, etc. And that requires a minyan. Kriya Sed Torah itself, which also requires a minyan, but maybe from a different din, maybe it's not a davar shebekdusha, doesn't fit that definition exactly. And perhaps counterintuitively, it could be that the Birchas HaTorah for the Aliyah, that's a davar shebekdusha, that's responsive, Baruch Hu Hashem Levarach, declaring God's greatness. And the Kriya Sed Torah itself is not. So that's the explanation. You've probably seen the practice of those who stand for the brachos, but don't stand for the Kriya Sed Torah itself, because the assumption that the brachos constitute the davar shebekdusha, but not the leinim. So why does leinim need a minyan? So the idea, I believe it suggested, was that it comes from somewhere else, that it's about evoking the environment of the original Nesinas HaTorah. That when the Torah was given originally, so it was B'maimed Klal Yisrael, it was the presence of the whole Jewish people, and they surrounded it. So we have other dinim also, the reading from the middle of the room, and it should be done Be'emo, V'ira, V'resis, V'zaya. We have various halachos which evoke the original giving of the Torah. And the minyan could be as part of that also. So based on that, if these last day psukim were not given that way, they were transmitted differently, so then maybe that would mean that the halacha of having a minyan also is connected to how this was passed down. And the last day psukim perhaps, at least theoretically, may have a different din to that. It's one possible approach. We'll mention another approach in a moment, but we haven't gotten to the last opinion. The last opinion actually is the one that has the greatest impact b'halach. Right, clearly, we can't be choshish to all of these six views. As we said, some of them are in direct contradiction to each other. So even the greatest brisker could not fulfill all the shitas of the last day psukim. But this last view actually has the greatest impact in how we perceive what's going on. Because the last view is the view of the Mordechai. It's quoted as a Yesh Omrim in the Ramah. But in the later Sfarim, and we will recognize it from our practice, it gets more attention. And what is that? Anyone want to take a guess? What is the last of the six views here? So the last interpretation of Yochid is Yochid HaMiuchad, is a distinguished person. The idea that this Aliyah should be given to a Talmud Chacham. So that then does represent itself in our practice, right? Because that Aliyah is Chasan Torah. That is a distinguished Aliyah, which ideally should be given to a Talmud Chacham, to a person of learning. And that indeed does, at least on some level, creep into our practice. That is something that we're familiar with from what we've seen. Chasan Torah is longer than those eight psukim, but it's included. Those eight psukim are included in the Aliyah that we call Chasan Torah nowadays. So it could be that this Gemara is the mucker for that din. The idea that these last eight psukim, Yachid Kari Osam, is the mucker for the notion of Chasan Torah for the distinguished Aliyah that is associated. So the problem is the Chacham Tzvi raises in a tshuva. There's something a little bit non-intuitive about that interpretation, even if it does match most closely what we do. There's something that's a little bit surprising about that. Can you anticipate what his question is?
Something that weren't written by Moshe Rabbeinu are the ones that we give to the Talmud Chacham?
Well, I think the way you're getting at is that it doesn't seem like this should be considered the most chashuv aliyah in the Torah. And it seems like it should be considered on a lower level. That what the Gemara is saying, that there's something about it that's not the same as the whole rest of the Torah, either written by Yehoshua or written by Moshe in a different way. So you would think that this is the least chashuv aliyah in the Torah. So why should it be given the most chashuv status?
That's exactly why.
Oh, okay. So, Ephraim, how would you say it?
So it's chashivas. So you'd think that if you didn't give it to a chashiv person, then it wasn't a chashiv part of the Torah.
Okay, so maybe like just to counter your impressions, we at the end of the day, literally, it is part of the Torah. So we need to make sure we appreciate that, which is an idea we find elsewhere sometimes, that we davka need to counteract such impressions by making a bigger show of things. The Kli Chemda adds a point to this. The Kli Chemda is a Sefer Al HaTorah. Was written by Reb Meir Don Plotzky, who was a Talmud of the Avnei Nezer and followed his tradition of Lamdas, and he wrote the Lamdashi things on the Chumash. So in his comments in Bezal Sabracha, so the Kli Chemda writes that he thinks that this is essentially a little bit of an extra spin on what Ephraim was saying, is that what's going on here? So Moshe is dying, right? And indeed, that is a tragedy. He's irreplaceable. Lo kam Yisrael kamosho. But the Torah does continue. And the Mesorah of the Torah continues. So one might think, okay, yes, it is axiomatic that we will never have someone like Moshe. But maybe we'll think it's hopeless. Okay, we'll never have any continuing Mesorah. So to counteract that point, it's crucial that we have a Baal Mesorah, get the Aliyah, that somebody who is, okay, he's not Moshe, but somebody who's in the tradition of Moshe Rabbeinu, somebody who is upholding the Mesorah and is able to convey that ongoing link, that should be how that Aliyah is given. That should be the message that is carried by giving that Aliyah to a Talmud Chacham, to somebody who can show the continuing transmission of the Mesorah of Moshe Rabbeinu, even though Moshe Rabbeinu himself dies in that Aliyah and is irreplaceable, but his Masora lives on. Chemda also goes on to say, while he's saying this, he thinks this could also explain the position of the Rambam, that maybe the idea that it doesn't need a minion is that everything else, the whole rest of the Torah, so Akash Baruch Hu said it, and then there's an interruption, so that Moshe said it and then wrote it down. But these last eight psukim, Moshe didn't say them out loud, so the Amira comes directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the whole rest of the Torah needs a minion to evoke the Shechina in order for the laning to happen. But the last day psukim came directly mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so maybe that's not a negative, maybe that's a positive, and maybe it provides its own minion. That's an added point. Really, the Mordechai and the Rambam are presumably making different points about what this means. Thought it was also interesting. I saw in one of the contemporary Svarim describe the situation that they had an early minion somewhere on Simchas Torah, had to rush a little bit because the later minion was coming in. And they only had 10, 12 people. And by the time they got to the end of the laning, so some had left, so they only had 9. And the guy who was supposed to get Chasen Torah, so he insisted that they can still read Chasen Torah anyway, because he is a Taimani, and the Taimanim follow the Rambam across the board. So he has the right to say, I follow the Rambam, we can read this Aliyah even without a minion. So it's a little interesting, because again, the whole idea that it's a Mechavadik Aliyah is probably based on the Mordechai, not the Rambam. So he wants his Kavod, he should get his Chasen Torah, but he's invoking the Shita, it's a different Shita. So, okay, you know, for Kavod, we make all kinds of interesting Cheshbonos. But in any event, so this is one perspective that the Kli Chemda has, that maybe what the Mordechai is telling us is that there is a special message that has to come with this Aliyah, and that's what's emphasized by having a Talmud Chacham read it. So it's also interesting to note that this could have added significance for the whole theme of the Kriyas HaTorah of Simchas Torah. Because there actually was a discussion in the Rishonim as to why we read Vezos HaBracha on Simchas Torah. So to us nowadays, it may seem obvious that we did the whole cycle of the laning, do the whole cycle of Chumash, and we're finishing now, and we're starting again in Bereishis right afterwards. So, okay, so we're going to read Vezos HaBracha and Simchas Torah. What else are you going to do? But it wasn't always the case that they had a one-year cycle. And the Gemara says in Eretz Yisrael, they used to have a three-year cycle, so they weren't necessarily up to Vezos HaBracha on Simchas Torah. But Rishonim discussed that they would read this anyway. So why is that read if it's not Kain, the Parshas HaShavua, the one Parshas HaShavua that's not on Shabbos? So what's the other reason to read Vezos HaBracha? So some understand that it's Me'inyan Shel Yom, that just like on every Yontif, we read something that fits to the day. So too, the last day of the Yontif season, when we've been through all of our Yom Tovim, we've been through Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Shmini Atzeres, now Simchas Torah, and we're now about to set off on the rest of the year. So we need inspiration. So the notion of Moshe's valedictory speech to Bnei Yisrael, his closing speech, that he gives the charge, he gives the inspiration to the Jews. So we want to have that as part of our mentality as we go off into our year following Simchas Torah. So that emphasizes this idea as well, that we don't necessarily have Moshe Rabbeinu with us. We don't necessarily have the high of Yontif for every mundane day of the rest of the year. But still Kodesh, it's still holy, and we can still hold on to that inspiration even when Moshe Rabbeinu himself is not actually there anymore, and even when Yontif is not actually continuing. But we're still able to take that message and take that inspiration and keep that a part of us. So perhaps that's an additional message which is particularly relevant for an alumni year. to also make that point that even after we leave the yeshiva, so it doesn't mean the yeshiva leaves us, doesn't mean that the connection to learning has stopped, doesn't mean the connection to the Masorah of the yeshiva is over. We take that with us. And that's very much the message of Chasam Torah, specifically as being given to a representative of the Masorah of Moshe Rabbeinu, and also the whole idea of this Kriyas HaTorah on the last day of Yantif, not only because of the cycle of the Chumash, but also to leave us with that point that this is something we can take with us and we can incorporate into our daily lives. And of course, with everything the world has been through these past years, we need these messages more than ever, that even when things are not ideal, things are not optimum, and we don't necessarily have all of the resources and all of the access that we've otherwise had, it's still possible to internalize and to take that inspiration and to run with it. And in fact, that is our obligation and that is our hope, to recognize that possibility and to capitalize on it. So I'll just quickly review what we spoke about. So we discussed this question of how could Moshe keep writing the Torah after it records his death. Gemara has these two possibilities. Either Yehoshua wrote it or Moshe wrote it Bedema. Different possibilities what Bedema means exactly. Maybe those two answers are part of one answer. But one way or another, this section is different and therefore has a different din. The Gemara says Yachid Kariyosan. But what does Yachid Kariyosan mean? We saw there were six interpretations in the Rishonim. Either it means two opposite things. Either it means that we davka read it with previous psukim, so it shouldn't be treated differently than the rest of the Torah, or we davka read it separately, so it should be treated differently than the rest of the Torah, or that we should only have one person reading it, not two, or that we shouldn't break it up into more than one aliyah. But the last two of the six interpretations were the ones that were most relevant to us. One, the Rambam's position that it doesn't need a minyan, and the Raivi disagreeing, saying, how did that even make sense? Hatzibor lehechan hochu, when's it going to come up? Where did Tzibor go? And noted, that seems surprising to ask the question. It's certainly conceivable that the Tzibor could walk out. So we shared some explanations of what it could be talking about, that maybe it means that you could, even though normally you could continue without a minyan, if you start with a minyan. So maybe the Ravid's question was a lumdish question, din sipor lehechon holchu. But the answer could be that either even a minority of a minyan could continue, and normally maybe you need a majority, or that maybe you can't start something new, and here you would be able to start even if this was a separate aliyah. But still, so how do you explain the din? Why should it be it doesn't need a minyan? So Soloveitchik suggested that the din minyan is not a normal Tefillah B'tzibur, not normal Davar Shevekedusha kind of idea, but it's because Kriyas HaTorah is about recreating the original Mesinas HaTorah, the Maimon Klal Yisrael, and maybe the last day of Psukim, if they were given differently, didn't need that. So one possibility. And then we also noted that the Rambam's position is one possibility, but another possibility is the Mordechai's position that Yachid means Yachid HaMiyuchad, a distinguished Talmud Chacham, should get this aliyah. And the Chacham Svi raised the question that it sounds like from the Gemara this is the least chashuv aliyah in the Torah, why should be given to the most chashuv? So as the Kli Chemda suggests, it could be that this is necessary to emphasize the continuing Mesorah of the Talmud Chachamim even after Moshe Rabbeinu is no longer there. And he also gives a different shot on the Rambam. And we also mentioned how presumably the Rambam and the Mordechai are still coming from different places. And we mentioned that Maisa Shahaya about the person who insisted he should get his Chasam Torah earlier, even though people had left because he follows the Rambam. But the Rambam probably doesn't have necessarily the same understanding as the Mordechai. But okay, for COVID, we can make funny combinations. But in any event, we noted also that it's also possibly relevant to the idea of bringing the Zos HaBracha on Simchas Torah, that when we end the Yantif, we want to remind ourselves that the spirit of the Yantif still will stay with us, and that therefore the Bracha of Moshe remaining to Klal Yisrael is the note that we want to end on. We mentioned how particularly relevant this is for an alumni year, but also how relevant it is for all the Klal Yisrael in these difficult times. And of course, we've lost so many great Talmid Chachamim over the past year and a half, the past 2 years. So the the Misa of Moshe Rabbeinu is something that we are particularly able to relate to, just in terms of the range of Torah that has been lost in Torah leadership over the past 2 years. But again, the message that as much as that is unfortunately the way of the world, but the Torah doesn't stop. The Torah continues to live with us. The Torah of these Talmidei Chacham and these great rabbinic leaders continues to live with us and should be able to carry us through all of the times ahead, which, as Hashem, should only be better times. So I wish you all a year of much improvement over the past year. It should be only good things. It should be a year of bracha, a year of mazel, a year of socha. Thank you for coming tonight, and please stay in touch.
Amen.
Okay, Shabbat. Best regards. Have a great night.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you. Thank you.